Well, good morning. How's everyone today? Everybody's good? Excellent. The heat hasn't killed anyone yet. That's good because it's been extremely hot. Let me get my technology moved over here. Our nice, lovely flannel graph board. If you're new here today, you're thinking, why is he moving this big piece of blue thing over to the stage? Because we're in the middle of a series right now we're calling Sunday School Stories. And if you're old like me, you grew up in a time when you went to church and in Sunday school, this was the technology that we had. It's called flannel graph. And this is how they would tell the stories that we would be learning in Sunday school. And I just have to admit, though, that every time I've stood up here and preached this summer, I feel like I say this, and this is my favorite story. And this is my favorite story. And this is my favorite story. And I realize, I question, can you have that many favorites, or is there supposed to be one? I don't know. But as we jump in today and we look at this next story, I have to tell you, this is one of my favorite stories. It's amazing. It's awesome. And as we talk about this story, you will find why they tell this story in Sunday school. But I hope as we look at this story, we'll see not just through the eyes of kids, but maybe we'll be challenged even in our own faith as adults to say, okay, what is the message for me? What is the principle from this individual's life that we should be bringing forward? And it may not be what you think. In fact, as we talk about this story, we're going to talk about some misconceptions of what sometimes we pull from this story that we probably shouldn't. And then we'll talk about what we should. This story takes us back to the Old Testament again, which is a lot of narrative stories, so we see a lot of heroes of the faith there. And we're moving into the Old, or go back to the Old Testament again this week. This incredible person, he had great character, he was upstanding, he was devout, he was a follower of God. And what we find when we look at his life is that all these things, his intelligence, his character, his God-following ability, none of this guaranteed that he had a trouble-free life. None of that guaranteed success, and none of that guaranteed ease in his life. And so today, what I want us to do is we want to look at the story of Daniel. Now, there's a book in the Old Testament actually named Daniel, and the last part of that book is all prophecy and interesting things about things that were to come. But the first six chapters deal a lot with his life. And as we begin the story in Daniel, what you find is that the children of Israel, the Israelites, the nation of Judah, had been carried off into captivity. They had disobeyed God, and God removed his protective hand from them as a nation, and he allowed the other nations to come in as a form of discipline to say, hey guys, let's get back to what you should be. Get back to following me. I told you I'd take care of you, and you could if you followed me. And so they wouldn't do it. They continued to worship idols. They continued to sacrifice children. They continued to do all these horrible, detestable things. And so the protective hand of God was removed. And around 600 BC, between 550 and 600 BC, is when the story of Daniel takes place. He's one of the ones that was taken captive. And in the beginning of the book, you find that he's a young man, but by chapter 6, he has been there serving in the service of these foreign kings, because what you find out is, as I said, he's a smart guy. He knew what he was doing. He was trustworthy. And we find that he has served under three different kings in the book of Daniel. He served under King Nebuchadnezzar. He served under King Belshazzar. And at the place we're picking up the story today, he's serving under King Darius. Nearly 70 years of his life was spent in service to these foreign kings. But that's okay, because that's what God called him to do. So there are several famous stories in the book of Daniel. I mean, if you're in chapter 3, you'll hear the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we're going to refer to that in a little bit. Got thrown into the fiery furnace. We could have picked that one. That's a great story too. One of my favorites. But today we're going to go to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel 6. At this point in his life, Daniel is about 80 years old. One commentary I read said 83, and I thought, wow, that's very specific. But okay, Daniel is 83. And when we get to this story, many times when we think about it, we think he's a young man, but he's really not. He's in his 80s. He had a full life. He served these kings, and he's known even more so now for what he's done. He was a great administrator. He was trusted by all these kings, and he rose in his position to be trusted by more and more kings. At this point, Daniel's in his 80s, and there's a new king called King Darius that comes to the throne. And Darius is an administrator. He knows how to run a kingdom. And so in order to run his kingdom, what Darius says is, he says, I need to divide this up. It's too much for one person to do. So he appoints 120 administrators to oversee the various parts of the kingdom, because the king wanted to make sure that nobody was cheating him, that nobody was, you know, getting out of their taxes. He wants to put these people to make sure that the kingdom is taken care of. But over these administrators, he appoints three satraps, these kind of kingdom overseers that were over the administrators. Well, Daniel was one of these satraps. He was one of these guys that was over the 120 administrators. And the king loved him so much. He did such an amazing job that the king even looked at Daniel and said, you know what I think I want to do with you? I'm going to make you in charge of everything second only to me. That everybody else in the kingdom will report to you, and then you will be the one that talks to me. And so, as you can imagine, this is great news for Daniel. It's a great thing for him, and it shows just what an incredible guy he is, hardworking, intelligent, all these things. In fact, we read in Daniel 6, it says that Daniel distinguished himself by his exceptional qualities, that he had these exceptional qualities. So he's a great guy. I mean, he's a guy you want to go out and have a cup of coffee with. This is the first service, so we can say you can go out and have a beer with, right? So this is an awesome guy. This is an awesome guy. You can't get away with that in the second service, just so you know. Never words uttered out of my lips, second service. So just so you know, there are differences. But as you can imagine, these other two guys that were appointed with Daniel, these satraps, these guys that were administrators, and then all these 120 administrators, they see Daniel getting all this praise. They see Daniel getting all this respect and honor from the king. And these guys don't like it. They don't like it at all. In fact, they are angry. Oh, I'm not even using my flannel graph. Just forget it. We're going to watch it on the screen. It's good. Just keep going. So, you got the administrators here. This is what it looks like on the flannel graph board, too. They're angry. They're upset. They're like, what's going on? Who is this guy? And we don't like him. Because one thing about Daniel, as I said, was he was an Israelite. He was a Jew who had been taken into captivity. So he wasn't even a native guy. He was an outsider. Oh my goodness. And he's the one getting all the recognition. These guys are upset. They don't like it. And they started thinking, all right, we need to take this guy down a notch. We need to get this guy out of the way because it's got to stop. So they look. And they look and they look and they try to do anything and everything they can to take Daniel out, to get him fired. But they could find nothing wrong in Daniel's life. There wasn't anything that they could point to that would highlight something wrong that they could take to the king and get him fired. In fact, it says that because he was so trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent, that is why they couldn't find anything. This guy is top notch, right? So not to be deterred, though, they're like, all right, we may not be able to find anything, but we do know some things about Daniel. They knew that Daniel loved his God. They knew that Daniel was a faithful, faithful follower of God. In fact, when you read Daniel 1, when they're taken into captivity, they're wanting to raise up all these young guys and make them healthy and look good, and they're wanting to feed them all this stuff and give them the best wine to drink. And Daniel like goes to the guy in charge, and he's like, I can't do this. This is against my, you know, what I believe, and I think it's against my God. And the guy's like, you got to do this. And Daniel said, well, let's do this. If you'll give me 7 days and let's see, let you do your thing with the other people and let me do my thing and let's see who looks good at the end. And he was able to keep his diet and things that he wanted. And at the end, Daniel looked better and was in better shape than any of the other people. So they knew this. This attitude of Daniel's of being devout to God and following God completely, everybody knew it. It wasn't a surprise. And so these guys, they say, you know what? If we're going to get him, then it's going to have to be something to do with his faith. Because we know without a doubt that Daniel is not a guy who will ever compromise his faith. So they come up with a plan. And they go to the king. And these guys are smart too. They play to the king's ego. He's a new king. He's new to power. He's still getting his feet under him. I mean, there's some insecurity there. There's some worry about other power struggles and all this. And so these guys go to the king and they're like, hey, King Darius, live forever. Woohoo! We love you, King Darius. Hey, we've got a great idea for you, King Darius. You are so amazing. You are so fabulous, King, that here's what we think you should do. This is an amazing idea. It's great. What you should do is you should pass a law that says for the next 30 days, no one can pray to anyone but you. Doesn't that sound like a great idea? Well, for a new king who's got a little bit of an ego anyway, he's like, you know what? Sounds like a pretty nice idea. I mean, in that time, it was very common for the kings to want to be deified. They wanted to be like God. They liked that that people thought of them as gods. And so, hey, pray to me for the next 30 days. That sounds great. So he writes out this edict, this law, and he stamps it, and it's of the law of the Medes and Persians. And what you find out about the law of the Medes and Persians is it says that those cannot be changed. They cannot be adjusted. It is in place and done until it's over. And that's it. And they made sure that when Darius passed this law, that it had that was how it was done. So it could not be changed. And while they're selling this to Darius, by the way, they're like, oh, Darius, we want you to know, all of us are agreeing with this. All your administrators, all your satraps, all of us, we think this is a great idea. And Darius is like, sure, let's do it. So they do it. What an ego boost. He's flexing his muscle a little bit. He's got this good plan. He's this semi-divine status now. And so he moves forward. But the one problem is the guys did lie to him, because not all his administrators were on board with this. Not everybody was with him on thinking this was a great idea. In fact, Daniel was not anywhere included in this thought process. But by the time he realizes this, it's too late. The king passes the edict, he puts it in writing, it's enacted, and it can't be changed. Even by the king, it can't be changed. Well, Daniel hears about this new law. And what's amazing about Daniel is he doesn't storm into the king's chamber demanding it be changed. He probably could have, because he had that level of authority and power with the king, but he doesn't do that. He doesn't get on Facebook and get on Snapchat, and he doesn't talk about how horrible it is and how this needs to change and all this. In fact, you know, after Daniel hears about the law, what he does is he does exactly what he's done his entire life. He doesn't change a thing. In fact, we read that he goes up to his room. He opens his window just like he's always done. He faces towards Jerusalem, which is where he liked to pray towards, and he'd bow on his knees and he would pray. And he prayed and he would give thanks to God, and he would pray and he would ask God to help him and intervene in his life. And he did that. It didn't stop him. Well, because this was a trap set for him, these guys were ready. They catch Daniel in the act and they run to the king and they're like, oh, king, we want to remind you, didn't you pass a law that said no one could pray to anyone but you? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure did. And they say, oh, and don't you remember, don't forget, that when you passed it, it can't be changed even by you. And he's like, yeah, that's right. Well, king, let me tell you something. That guy Daniel, that foreigner Daniel, he's not listening to your decree. He is not paying attention to you. He's disrespecting you. And now you're going to have to deal with him. Well, King Darius was upset, but not for the reason you think. He wasn't upset that Daniel prayed to his God. He was upset that he had been duped. He was upset that he had been caught in this plan and there was nothing he could do about it. He loved Daniel. Daniel was his most trustworthy guy in his court. And he's sitting here thinking, what have we done? What have I done? And so for the entire day, the King Darius is doing everything he possibly can, everything he can think of to try to get Daniel out of this verdict, to get him out of this sentence that is coming, which is death. But nothing happens. In fact, the guys come back again and they're like, hey, Darius, listen up. You said it. You put it in law. It can't be changed. So you've got to deal with this. And finally, Darius relents. He gets Daniel. He takes him, and I imagine there's a long conversation between the two where Darius is like, Daniel, I hate this, man. I am so sorry that this has to happen. And right before he throws Daniel into the lion's den, which was the punishment for this, Darius looks at him, and he says to him, Daniel, may your God save you. May the God that you pray to be the one that brings you through. And they throw Daniel into the lion's den. There he is. The king goes home and he's upset. He's distraught. It says that he can't eat, and that's pretty upsetting if I couldn't eat. That's a big deal. Can't eat, can't sleep. King has entertainment at his will. He's like, I don't want to be entertained. This guy's really suffering because his friend, someone he cares deeply about, is in the bottom of a pit with the lions. The next morning we read that he gets up and he runs as fast as he can to the lion's den. And he's hollering out, Daniel, are you there? Are you there? And he hears Daniel's voice speak out. And Daniel says, I'm here. And it says in the Bible, it says that Daniel was completely unharmed because he had trusted God. They pulled Daniel out of this pit. The king sees for himself, not a scratch on him. And remember, these were real life lions. These are lions that are hungry and not tame. And, you know, this was kind of what they did sometimes for sport and to take care of problems. But Daniel comes out and he doesn't have a scratch on his body. Well, the king, realizing what had happened, turns his attention to the individuals who had caused all this. And basically he says, because of what you've done, you will suffer the fate that you intended for Daniel. And what's miraculous as Daniel not being eaten is they take these administrators and their families and they throw them into the lion's den. And it says they are eaten and crushed before they hit the floor. Terrible story right there, right? Horrible. They're killed. But the story ends with the king passing a brand new law for all nations and peoples of every language of the earth. And here's what he said. He said, may you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. I love this story. And you can see why kids would just eat this story up. Because kids don't stop and think like we do. That's really sad what happened to those administrators' family. They're just like, oh, cool, lions. That's awesome. You know, that's what they're thinking. But you can see why this is such an amazing story. The problem with the story of Daniel is that if we're not careful, we will make a couple of assumptions that I think can take us off track of what the intent of the story really is. The first assumption I think we make is this, that whenever we face difficulty or persecution, don't worry, God will bring us through it in the way he brought Daniel through. And while Daniel is certainly a story of miraculous deliverance, it doesn't always end that way, does it? And some of you are shaking your heads in agreement because you know in your own life, sometimes it doesn't end that way. I mean, even just a few weeks ago, I told you the story of Stephen. You remember Stephen in the New Testament? He was a faithful teacher of God, preached the gospel to people, led people to Christ. He was one of the first deacons in the very first church. I mean, this is a guy of stature and a guy that knows what he's doing, and he's arrested. And in his arresting, he's convicted, but there's no miraculous deliverance for him. The stones that they throw at him to kill him with kill him. He's not miraculously delivered. So when we read Daniel, there's a tendency for us to say, because the Bible says, and he was delivered because he trusted God. And we say to people, you know what? If you want deliverance, you just trust God. I don't know. Stephen trusted God pretty well too. And yet his deliverance came in a different form. We have to be careful that we don't read the book of Daniel and say, oh, you just need more faith. You just need to trust better and God will see you through, because the deliverance that God brings us is not always the deliverance we're asking for. Sometimes it's a different type of deliverance that may be deliverance from this world into the next, into the kingdom of God. That's what the deliverance can look like. But I think we have to be careful, because Daniel can certainly be twisted to say, oh, have more faith. The second thing I think we have to be careful of when we read Daniel is there's a danger in trying to use Daniel to call whatever we are experiencing persecution. And it moves us to a place that's, I would say, of nonviolent resistance. whether it's laws that are being passed that we don't like, whether it's the other person from the other political party being elected, whether it's things even like prayer being removed from schools, Christians in America are notorious for shouting, "Not fair! Oh, we're being persecuted!" Can we stop that? Can we please, dear God, put an end to this false crying of persecution of Christians in America? You're sitting in this church today, I got news for you. You're not being persecuted. It's completely different. Completely different. We have to stop using this to justify it. You know, 2 days ago, Ryan was talking about Zoo to You. 2 days ago, we had this amazing event here in our yard. You know what happened Thursday morning? I'm sitting in my office, I hear the door open, and I could hear, and I knew where this conversation was going. It was the director of parks for West Des Moines. And he's like, "Well, we've gotten wind that you guys are going to do a petting zoo, and we'll talk about that." And we're talking, and as I'm talking to him, I'm like, "All right, this is fine." And I looked at him, and I'm like, "You know, if it's a big deal, it's not a big deal to us, we'll move it." And we did. Event worked great. But you know, I could have looked at that and gone, "Guys, we were persecuted. We experienced such great persecution. They don't love Jesus, is why they wouldn't let us have that in the park. That's why we need to pray for the city of West Des Moines." You know, and sometimes Christians do that. We do that. I have to tell you, that was not persecution. It was annoyance, yes, but it was not persecution. We thought we had covered our bases. We thought we had everything covered, but evidently we didn't. And you know what? The guy that came in, he's a Christian, and he said, "Look, I know what you're trying to do. I didn't want to come here and have to talk to you." And what's even bigger than that is his wife used to be a preschool teacher for us. She worked for me. And so it's hard to look at that and go, "Well, he doesn't love Jesus, and we're just being, oh my God, what are we going to do?" Okay, we cannot look at Daniel and say, "Well, Daniel was persecuted and so am I." That is completely different. And we have to agree on this. When the law went into place and said Daniel couldn't pray, it was Daniel couldn't pray at all. They didn't say, "Daniel, you can't pray at school." They said, "You can't pray at all." They didn't say, "Daniel, you can't pray at this time of day." They said, "You can't pray at all." There is a difference. Daniel knew what persecution was about. Stephen knew what persecution was about. In Daniel 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow down to a false idol. That is persecution because they were thrown into a fiery furnace. This is persecution. We have to stop throwing around that word as if we are really being abused because somebody asked us to take a manger scene off the courthouse lawn. Not persecution. And we need to figure out what true persecution is. So we cannot use Daniel every time something doesn't go our way. In fact, we probably should take the attitude of Daniel. What was the attitude of Daniel? He didn't rally the troops. He didn't post on social media how unfair or difficult these people were. What did he do? He prepared to die. You catch that? His response wasn't to even fight. His response was to prepare to die. Because as Christ followers, we don't fight for our beliefs by killing others. We fight for what we believe by dying. That's what Daniel shows us. We need the attitude of Daniel when it comes to persecution, but okay, even when things are a little unfair toward us. Now, as I read Daniel this week, I thought, you know, there's 3 or 4 perspectives I think we could pull from this story, some good principles that we need to be aware of. And really, it's from the 3 major players in the story. The first one starts with the administrators. Man, these guys, they're ridiculous, right? They are so jealous that they can't even see straight. They hate Daniel. They want to do everything they can to get rid of him. In fact, they're so jealous that they are willing to do anything to eliminate him. And jealousy blinds them, and as it often does with us too, it's blinding. And what's amazing is as you look at these administrators, they were picked for these positions because they were supposed to be looking after what? The interest of the king. They were supposed to put the interest of the king above all else. And yet, in what they did to Daniel, did that put the interest of the king above all? Absolutely not. Because the interest of the king says, Daniel's pretty amazing. I need him to help me run this country. But they didn't have the king's interest at heart. They had their own interest at heart to the detriment of the king. And jealousy allowed their priorities to become twisted and allow their selfishness to drive them to a horribly bad decision. What generated this jealousy within them? You know what it was? Comparison. Comparison. Looking at someone else and saying, I want what they have. I don't like what they have. I want it for me. That comparison was the beginning of a long downward spiral for them that led to the bottom of a lion's den. When they compared themselves to what Daniel had, the job that he had, they saw him as an obstacle that needed to be removed. As I was talking with Ryan this week, I put in my notes, I says, as the famous, now internationally known Bible teacher Ryan Leonard said to me, he said, when you play the comparison game, you always lose. See, I even gave him credit on the screen. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Isn't that true, though? Have you ever done the comparison game where you look at someone else and come out ahead? Have you ever looked at someone else and said, oh, well, this is great? No. When you look at others, you always find something they have that you want, something in them that's better. And what does that do? It makes you discontent. It creates in you jealousy. And that's exactly what we see in the administrators. It changes your perspective and it deceives you. What they thought would actually bring Daniel down was actually what brought them down. And their jealousy didn't just hurt them. It took down those around them. I feel sorry for their families. Because what did they do? Those wives just married the wrong men. Lesson for you right there, women. Make sure you're paying attention to who you marry, right? Or you might end up in a lion's den. Exactly. See? But doesn't jealousy work that way? It takes down others around us. And we can't see that at the time. We're so focused in on the comparison. We're so blinded by what's happening. We fail to pay attention to the reality that's going on really in our lives. We have to be on the lookout for signs of comparison and jealousy in our lives because it's far more deceptive than we know and it's far more destructive than we can possibly ever imagine. Jealousy is that way. That's what we see from the administrators. The second thing we see is from King Darius. King Darius, he's an interesting guy. And he loves Daniel, and you think, oh, this guy's great. He's got the right mentality, but does he really? He loved Daniel. He'd have never done anything to intentionally to hurt him. And as we've seen, Daniel's really the only one in the story that has the king's best interest at heart. But Darius had a huge ego. He had a huge ego that liked to be fed, and his pride revealed a serious weakness, a blind spot in his life. And he allowed his ego to get the better of him. This insecurity, this desire to be godlike, led him to accept the counsel of people who were not looking out for him, but looking out for themselves. Did you catch that? Pride had him looking to the people that were just feeding that ego instead of the people that were actually for him. Pride will do that to us sometimes. What's fascinating to me about the king is he is the most powerful person in the land. He's got all the power, and yet he passes this law that was intended to set him up as God, but in the end stripped him of all his power. Because even he was unable to change the law. Even he was unable to do anything to help Daniel once he was accused. What should have made him the most powerful person in the world made him impotent. And pride gives us the impression of power, but leaves us completely powerless. We have to be aware of the pride. Pride will do that to us. It'll blind us just like jealousy will. Darius was duped by these guys, but fortunately for him in the end, what we see in Darius is a repentant heart, humble, and giving God the glory for delivering Daniel. What an amazing transformation for him. His new decree acknowledged that Daniel's God is the living God, a statement not that just he exists, but that he is alive and active and sovereign in the world. Darius shows us what pride can do to us. Third perspective is this of Daniel, a man who is faithful to God his entire life. and not just faithful to God, but has complete and utter trust in God. And you know, I think when we hear the story of Daniel in the lion's den, there's a mentality that we can bring to it that says, oh, Daniel trusted God. He knew he would get through this. I don't think so. I think Daniel actually went to the lion's den thinking, God can deliver me, but he might not. How do I know? Because I remember Daniel chapter 3, when the three Hebrew children were thrown into the fiery furnace. Listen to what they said before they were thrown in there. They said, if we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up. I think that is exactly Daniel's mentality. I serve a God who is able. He is completely able to deliver and do anything he wants to do. He is all powerful. He is completely sovereign. But if he chooses not to, that's okay by me. And I think Daniel approached the lion's den saying, I'd rather pray. And if praying means I have to die, then I'm willing to die. Think about that for just a moment. Daniel says, I am unwilling to stop praying, even if it costs me my life. Now, I don't know about you, I find that a little convicting. Because I would have found ways to justify it. God, okay, it's only 30 days. You understand, right, God? I don't really have to pray to you right now. God, I'll catch up with you in 31 days. It'll be fine. I can hear me saying that. I can hear me saying, God, isn't it better that I live? I mean, I can have a greater influence in the world if I'm alive than if I'm dead. So, God, I'm just going to stop praying. But Daniel looks at it and he's like, not at all. I am going to pray, and even if it costs me my life, I'm going to pray. And what Daniel shows us is that true discipleship is costly. It's costly, maybe not in the way of a lion's den, but it cost us in our time, in having to give up entertainment. If we're going to be true followers of Jesus, it means surrendering our will and our desires to him. It means we have to say no sometimes to the things that the world may be enticing us with, in order to get something better, which is the presence of God. Following Jesus doesn't guarantee the easy life free of persecution and suffering. In fact, often it means just the opposite. But what Daniel shows us is that God can be trusted, and regardless of the outcome, regardless of whether he lived or died, Daniel knew that God was in control, and he could have faith in God for the outcome of his life. Daniel shows us this about discipleship. Daniel's kind of convicting to me. Thought about adding a fourth perspective, that of the lions, because I thought it was fascinating to think. Can you put yourself in the lion's shoes for just a second? I mean, here's dinner thrown in, Daniel, and they're like, you know, they're like, this is crazy, right? What's going on? And then the next day, Daniel's taken out, and they're like, oh my goodness, what happened? I can open my mouth again. The people jumped in, they're like, oh, or thrown in, breakfast, great, yummy. And so, but I digress. That was the perspective of the lions. What I found fascinating about Daniel was, if you look at Daniel and you look at Jesus, there are a lot of overlaps. In fact, one thing I read this week even called Daniel kind of a pre-Jesus, and I thought, that's really cool. I mean, think about it for just a second. What did Daniel endure? He was conspired against just like Jesus. He was found guilty of wrongdoing just like Jesus. They both trusted God throughout the entire situation, realizing that whatever happened they could trust God with. Both of them were placed in what could be called tombs, Daniel in the lion's den that would certainly have been his final resting place. Both tombs were covered with stones when you read the details of the story. Both graves were sealed. The next morning, Daniel was found alive. 3 days later, Jesus had resurrected from the grave. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that an interesting kind of comparison between Daniel, how Daniel can be a prefigure of Jesus? But what is important to understand is that Jesus is a much, much greater Daniel. Why is this important? Because both of these individuals, Jesus and Daniel, highlight to us that God has the ability to save. But our ultimate salvation is not whether God rescues us from the lion's den. It's not if God rescues us from our current situation. Our ultimate salvation is the salvation he provides to us from sin, death, and the grave, and the salvation to life bought by the blood of Jesus Christ on the cross and his resurrection. That's what this story shows us. What we find in Daniel is that God is not stumped when this happens. When bad things happen in the world, he's not wringing his hands. God can and will overrule the evil intentions of humanity to bring about salvation, sometimes in the way we expect, sometimes not. As I close, there's a couple things I want you to think about. When life doesn't go like you think it should, what's your reaction? And what does that reaction say about your faith? Does it draw you closer to God, or does it push you further away? What does how you handle adversity say about your trust in God? I don't say that as a convicting statement. I say it just as a question that makes us think. And I don't want to say it to make you think that if you ever have doubts, that's a horrible thing, because I think doubts can be a great thing in strengthening and building our faith. But I did have the thought this week, if a law were passed like this in our day, and there was a law that said we couldn't pray or read our Bibles or meet together for worship, how many of us would really be affected? Or are we so disengaged from spiritual disciplines of things like prayer and Bible reading that there wouldn't even be enough evidence to convict us? I know that's convicting, but we have to acknowledge that spiritual growth doesn't occur apart from these things. Spiritual growth doesn't occur apart from prayer and worshiping together and community of faith and Bible reading. And I know that sounds archaic, and I know it sounds juvenile even. Well, that's what you talk to teenagers about. But even for us, if we're not spending time in those things, can we really say we're growing in faith? And what's so difficult is I can stand up here and say these things to you, but I can't do them for you. I can teach you the word. I can encourage you to do it. But me, I can't do it. Pastor Ryan, Pastor Amy, we can't do this for you. We have to make these decisions. As I said earlier, discipleship is costly, and following Jesus certainly doesn't guarantee an easy life. And even though it may not look like what we expect because of the work of Christ on the cross, we can be sure from the story of Daniel that we will experience deliverance, either in this world or in the next.